the midweek drive, zooming into the future and energized by the now.
Well, exciting things are indeed happening as far as Walkabout is actually concerned, because in the very near future, and I'm talking Wednesday the 29th of November here, there is a grand event that's going to be taking place that's including all manner of wonderful things. In fact, it's entitled Bingo Through the Decades. And to actually talk us through this whole event, we're delighted to welcome to the programme today the wonderful Poppy Kelly. How are you, Poppy?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Great to connect with you. Now, Poppy, just to set the scene, you are a Level 2 undergraduate reading Public Relations and Communications, yeah?
Yes.
Excellent. At the University of Lincoln, clearly. So, Bingo Through the Decades. Tell us a bit about it. What's it focusing on, etc.?
So, we're doing this event to raise money for Links and Knots Air Ambulance. And what we're doing is 4 rounds of bingo, and each round is themed around a different decade. So one is the 80s, then 90s, 2000s, and then 2010s. Each round, 2 prizes can be won. And we have prizes from all over Lincoln, from like Hotel Chocolate, Glory Holes, Beer Keller. So a lot of prizes available for people to win.
Now, the impressive thing, of course, is that tickets for this are mere £2 each. So a genuine bargain from that point of view. Presumably you're looking for a good social time for the whole evening.
Yeah, we're trying to make something that everyone can enjoy themselves. And yeah, tickets at £2, but we will have places available for people to donate more money if they want to. But yeah, we wanted to do it cheap because it's a student event. Not everyone can afford a lot of. So yeah, we wanted to do it.
But it's a good cause. It's for the Links and Knots Air Ambulance, and they are actually a very good cause. We've met up with them beforehand. In fact, a few years ago, comms and PR students actually were doing their work for the Links and Knots Air Ambulance, so it's good to see that that continues ever onwards. Now, I've got to ask a critical question here. You say bingo through the decades, and 80s, 90s, noughties and teenies. Is fancy dress compulsory?
We said fancy dress optional, but it would be good if people could dress up. I suggested maybe Britney Spears.
For the 90s.
Any icons from those sort of decades.
90s. I mean, Madonna obviously springs to mind from the 80s.
Yeah,
you
definitely.
Could possibly have a bit, you could have a bit of madness, perhaps. You could have a new romantic look if you're going back that line there. You've got boy bands, of course, girl bands. I mean, presumably you could actually have a Spice Girls number the 90s.
Definitely.
Wear the Union Jack dress. I mean, there are all sorts of things there. In the noughties, who would spring to mind there? Well, I suppose if you're Britney, you'd probably cross over. Christina Aguilera?
Maybe, yeah.
Ed Sheeran? Of course, we get Katy Perry. How far or how long have you been planning this event? Because obviously it's happening on the 29th of November, but you've been pretty much working on it for a wee while, I believe.
Yeah, since the end of September, I think. But yeah, we've been meeting like every week for a couple hours, and we've done quite a lot in it's not a short amount of time, but it is in comparison to planning an event.
Sure.
We've all had different roles focusing on different things, and yeah, it's gone quite well so far.
So would you like to give a little shout out to the rest of your team, because I know it's more than just Poppy Kelly's paragons of virtue?
We've got a finance team which has Ella on it, and then we have the operations team which has Karen on it, and then we have the project management team which has Mariana on it. They're all the team leaders.
Which makes perfect sense. Have you actually spoken to Links and Knots Air Ambulance? Are they going to be turning up on the night? Or is it a case of, we appreciate what you're doing, we've got too much time that we need to actually spend saving lives?
Yeah, I think they're a bit busy to show up to bingo. But our finance leader, Ella, she has connections with them. So she got in contact with them and they sent us, you know, a lot of posters and stuff that we can put up on the event, and sent us loads of information that we can give people as well.
Okay, so we got the date. It's Wednesday the 29th of November, 2023, clearly. Time is 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., clearly. Can people actually sign up via a website? Is there a Facebook page? How can people actually sort of say, I want to be there, or do they just turn up at the door?
Yeah, well, we have an Instagram page called Links Decades Bingo, and on there should be the link to the tickets, which is on Eventbrite.
And are you looking forward to it yourself, Poppy?
I am, yeah. I was a bit nervous, but I think it should go okay.
Are you a keen bingo player? Have you engaged in bingo before?
I mean, we did do a practice round the other day and I won both times, so I think I'm
Yeah. But then you'd have to hand the prizes back, because presumably, you, as an organiser, you're not entitled to actually keep the prizes.
No, so. No, but a couple of my friends are going, so I might reap some of the benefits.
Okay, very good. Excellent stuff. Well, again, a reminder, 29th of November, 2023. That's not a bingo number, although you might like to use them from that point of view. Likewise, 18:30 to 20:30, 6:30 to 8:30 at Walkabout in Lincoln. A fantastic event. Bingo through the decades, and it's in aid of the Links and Knots Ambulance. Poppy Kelly, have you enjoyed your first time on the Midweek Drive?
I have actually, yes.
Well, there we are. Hopefully you'll come back again for a little bit longer when you tell us how successful the event has actually been.
Yes, of course.
Now, one of those penetrating catchphrases of recent years has to be, should have gone to Specsavers. Of course, that's now been changed to Specsavers can come to you, and quite rightly so. But we're delighted to welcome now the founder of that awesome company, Specsavers, indeed. I make use of them, certainly. Dame Mary Perkins, how are you, Dame Mary?
I'm very well, thank you. Fancy you seeing that advert.
I know, exactly. Yeah. It's almost as though advertising sometimes works, really. Amazing.
Yeah. But. Well, the creative department, I sit very near to them. It's done in, we do it internally. I've just won a major award in London for that advert.
Well, excellent. Well, congratulations to them. Do pass on that, because
It was an important message to get across as well, because I don't think generally people realise that they're entitled, if they can't leave their home, that they're entitled to a home visit, to have their eyes examined and all the eye care that's needed. Yeah. I don't think
we realise. Effectively, there are nearly 3 million people, apparently, in the UK who would benefit from receiving eye care in their own home, yet less than a quarter actually have had home visits made by, of course, a qualified optometrist, etc. And the importance of our eyes and vision as a sense can never be underestimated, can it?
No, you're so right. In fact, I was reading an Age UK did a report a few years back, or 2 years back or whatever, and it was about people, elderly people who fall over and visiting A&E and having to be put into hospital. And a third of them, they say the falls were because of poor eyesight. Their vision wasn't as it should be. So that's very high, and that's something that we can easily stop. It's easy for us people who walk around to go into a Specsavers store and have your eyes tested, make sure you can see well, but also have the eye health of your eye checked as well. But of course, when you're in your own home and you can't leave for whatever reason, it might be you're elderly, it might be that you're younger, but you've got some disability, you don't automatically think about your eyes. But of course, you're watching TV, you're reading, you're doing things in your home, and maybe somebody's got a hobby that they might be able to knit or something like that. You want to be able to have good vision, but as you get older, you also need the health of your eye checked, and there's many things that can be helped give you better vision. So. I don't think people realise. Maybe that's why we've got that big gap in numbers. So this is one way your listeners now will know, won't they? So I'm hoping that they will realise if they are housebound, that they are entitled to eye care in their home.
Now, clearly, it's good news for Specsavers home visits, because I was astounded to find it's celebrating its 10-year anniversary.
Yes.
Conducted over a million sight tests. Seems to have flashed by in so many ways. But there is still a challenge with respect to the government, specifically with respect to a pre-visit notification that's a government requirement. Perhaps Dame Mary, you'd like to explain why actually you're calling on effectively avoiding that particular bit of bureaucracy.
Yes, well, it's another barrier, really, another hurdle to get over before you can go and visit somebody, because that's got to be put in 48 hours before you visit one person in their own home. If you're visiting a care home, it's much longer, up to 3 weeks to put this pre-visit notification in, just to go and see somebody to look after their eyes. Do you know, somebody might correct me, but you know, I really don't think that doctors have to give 48 hours notice to visit you in your home to check on your health or go to a care home and 3 weeks notification. I don't think that happens. So it's not necessary for a highly qualified optometrist who's going to look after the eye health of somebody's eyes in their home. I don't feel it's necessary. It's a bit of a barrier. It's a funny thing. It didn't used to happen in the past. I'm an optometrist. I'm fairly old optometrist now, but for many years, good 15 years, and I lived in Bristol then, I visited people in their own homes and in care homes. It was a lovely job. It was lovely to see people and talk to them and help them with their eye care. We didn't have any notifications to do in those days. And I have to say, I'm going on a little bit, this only happens in England. Wales and Scotland, you don't have to have that notification. So I'm not sure why we have it. Somebody will come up with a reason, no doubt, but it's a barrier and it should be removed.
It seems extraordinary. And of course, as we regularly say, when we're doing features on eye health, regular eye tests are important, not only to identify changes in vision, but also to detect early signs of any other conditions that might be effectively impacting our vision and visual sensors. Should people wish to find out further details, and I suspect it's fairly obvious, really, just go to Specsavers in terms of this. Presumably, they can also find out details online as well about home visits.
Yes. I think the easiest thing to do, because not everyone's going to have a paper and pencil ready while we're speaking, is go to the website for Specsavers, put in Specsavers, look at the website, and then go to the home visit page. It's quite easy to do that. Look at the home visit page. Now, that does allow you to book online, but I strongly advise using the phone number there and ringing up. Those people are very good. It's not a robot. There's a human being, and they can help advise and get you the appointment for someone to visit in your home. So that's the thing. Go on the website, Specsavers website, look at the home visit page and find that phone number. And if you feel you can't ring up, I'm sure you've got a relative, granddaughter, grandson, somebody, if you're elderly, who can do that for you and arrange for an appointment. So it's fairly straightforward, really. But as you say, failing that, just toddle along to a Specsavers store there in the high street and ask them as well. Yes,
absolutely. Been a genuine privilege sharing some thoughts with your good self today, Mary. Again, Specsavers founder, you must be very proud about how the company's developed. It's really kind of added a whole range of opportunities, I think, for people's eye health.
Yes, yeah, it is. And when I set out, I was an optometrist for many years before Specsavers, I have to say, and we're coming up to 40 years next February, by the way. It's the home visit side was always really very important, but also the fact that every Specsavers, the people in that store, the optometrists and the opticians in that store, own that store in partnership. And a joint venture partnership. So we work very closely together and we all meet up and work out what is best for the patient, customer, whatever you want to call them. What do they want? Not what we think they want, but what do they want, and to treat them accordingly. So eye care is very top of the list. It's not just a matter of selling glasses. It's also, you're quite right, it's the health of the eyes. So many things. You could be diabetic. You've got to have your eyes checked over. People know about cataracts. People know about glaucoma. But these things can be spotted early on and dealt with an eye examination with a qualified optometrist. And it's as simple as that. And we want to make sure that people in their own homes have the same treatment as you would if you could walk into a Specsavers store. So it's quite straightforward, really. We're there for everyone.
Absolutely.
We're not going to leave one section of people out. So and there's a large number of people, sadly, who are unable to leave their homes, and there's not enough of them getting the eye care that they need. So I'm hoping everyone's listening and will be looking at that webpage.
Well, it's been a genuine delight, as I said. Dame Mary Perkins, founder of Specsavers, huge thanks, and hopefully we'll speak again in the very near future.
Thank you. A pleasure.
It is literally around the corner, almost. Yes, Black Friday. Are you trembling? Well, maybe, maybe not. Are you going to get a bargain? Again, maybe, maybe not. Recent research by Capital One Bank suggests that maybe a lot of consumers are vulnerable to those pesky sales traps. And so we're delighted to actually feature today somebody who can certainly address these issues. She's a key retail strategy expert. She's also the author of Amazon, How the World's Most Relentless Retailer Will Continue to Revolutionize Commerce. It is, of course, the wonderful Natalie Berg. How are you, Natalie?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Alex.
Well, great to connect with your good self, but clearly my skepticism about online retailers and deals perhaps sounding too good to be true, actually being too good to be true, may have some basis in fact, it would seem.
That's right. I think there is a lot of distrust around the Black Friday deals, and for good reason, because various studies have shown that a number of these deals, a large number of these deals, are actually found to be the same price or even cheaper at other times of the year. And we know that retailers, there are some genuine discounts. So let's start with that. There are genuine discounts out there, but you have to seek them out. You have to do your homework, because retailers often will inflate the price of a lot of products just before Black Friday, only to slash them on the day. So retailers can create this illusion of discounts, this illusion of jaw-dropping deals, but sometimes they are just a little bit too good to be true.
Price discrimination springs to mind, and I believe that just over a fifth of us are actually aware of what price discrimination actually is.
Yeah, and I think the challenge with Black Friday is it's not only a case of deciphering hype from reality, because again, there are some genuine discounts out there, but the other issue we have is around unnecessary spending, because the Capital One UK research showed that over half of consumers are buying things that they don't need just because it's in the sale. So I think that's an important thing to bear in mind. This is a very big time for retail. It's a crazy time for shoppers. It's the only time of year when pretty much the entire high street is on sale. So it is very easy to get swept up in the frenzy of Black Friday. If you checked your emails today, you'll see we are constantly getting bombarded with messages encouraging us to spend. So we need to do it in a mindful and rational way.
I was intrigued to find is that the items that people are most commonly looking for this year include furniture. I can understand that. Makeup, clothes, appliances, household appliances, yes. But televisions, I thought we'd actually fallen out of love with that television scenario. Everything was all on screens and such like, and telephones and tablets and such like. Is the flat screen television driving a whole new revolution for people wanting better televisions?
Well, electricals is a category that always does really well at Black Friday because there's a lot of margin to build in. So retailers are really strategic. Electricals retailers are really strategic around Black Friday. And again, make sure that the price is right. I think, as you mentioned, there's other categories as well that we'll see shoppers looking to snap up bargains. Clothing as well, I think, is an interesting one this year. It has been a challenging time for fashion retailers, not only because we as consumers are holding back on some of those discretionary purchases because of the strains on our budgets, but also because of the weather. We've had unseasonably warm weather this year across the UK. It has turned in the past couple of weeks, but from all the fashion retailers I've been speaking to, it's been a really slow start. And it's good news for consumers because it means a lot of retailers will be sitting on a lot of inventory that they'll be looking to clear. So there will absolutely be bargains out there for consumers. It's just about making sure that consumers are doing their homework and ensuring that it is a genuine bargain.
Regular advice, of course, is to have a budget and stick to it. But I see that a considerable number of us do significantly go over budget. Now, we can kind of understand that in the real world, shall we say, maybe, when you're kind of into shops and stores, etc. But this is very much a cyber event. Of course, we've got Cyber Monday coming through as well, which I suppose is another whole issue. Do you think it is important that people effectively take time to reflect and avoid the impulse purchase?
Yeah, and that's easier said than done, right? It is a crazy time when everyone is on sale and you feel that real fear that you're going to miss out. And I thought something else that was really interesting that came out of the Capital One UK research was the fact that over a quarter of consumers tend to return items that they don't need. So again, buyer's remorse is always an issue. As soon as the craze of Black Friday is over, as soon as we start thinking calmly and rationally again, what we often find is that we've bought a lot of stuff that we don't actually need or we don't actually want. And so that creates another challenge for both consumers and retailers, because returns are a headache. They're a hassle for consumers. And another thing to point it out this year is that some retailers have actually started charging for returns. So in many cases, you can return an item to the store for free, but you might actually have to pay a fee if you're going to return that item by post. So I think that's an important consideration for when shoppers hit the high streets, that, you know, if you overspend and buy too much and or buy things in many sizes and then send back the ones you don't want, which is, let's face it, that's how a lot of us shop today. That might cost us a little bit more this year. And it's a huge headache for retailers too. They can't go on and sell that item at full retail price in most cases. Mm. And then there's the environmental cost to all of this consumption as well. So there's a lot to consider, and it certainly pays to be more mindful if you can.
I was going to talk about sustainability, but of course, understanding returns policies is one of your top six tips to actually develop and bear in mind before you actually go into battle with Black Friday. Should we just quickly go through them, starting off, Natalie, with doing your homework?
Sure. Yeah. So I think in terms of doing your homework, again, this is about being as prepared as you can. So I think as consumers today, the good news is we are living in this digital era where we are armed with technology right in our back pockets. You can utilize price comparison sites. You can also look at things like price checker apps, where you can view the pricing history of specific items and see how that pricing has changed over time. Mm. So I think that's a really important thing, is really do your homework and make sure that, you know, you are fully informed and you're not making it won't lead you down the path of this unnecessary spend that we often see at Black Friday.
And doing your homework also leads into looking for bargains before Black Friday, registering with your favorite retailers, and of course, staying focused. As you say, sometimes easier said than done, but nevertheless worthwhile. And utilizing cashback sites and credit cards could be quite a useful one.
Absolutely. So this is another way where you can just essentially make your spending go further. And that's especially true for those big ticket items. I actually just bought a dining table and chairs. Again, this was something that, you know, we needed. I had planned on buying at some point this year, and I thought I'm going to hold
out.
For...
Okay, you don't have to explain. It's all right. It's
trying done. To justify my purchase
exactly.
here.
Yes.
I held out for those deals, for those early access deals, and I was ready to spend. So again, sticking to your list is really important. But credit cards, again, when used responsibly, credit cards can be a great tool to help budget and spread the cost of those big ticket buys. And again, using cashback sites as well can just help that spending go a little bit further.
Very much so. Of course, I'm now going to be hunting the various sites for how do I get a Black Friday deal on Amazon, how the world's most relentless retailer will continue to revolutionize commerce, because that's obviously a must-buy text for my good self. But for the moment, Natalie Berg, huge thanks, and happy Black Friday, and indeed Cyber Monday. Or is Cyber Monday something where you just go into bed and just relax, basically, and say, I can't cope anymore after Black Friday?
Sadly, it's just more shopping.
Yeah. So, Generation A, Generation Alpha. Yes, we've passed Generation Z, we're up to Generation Alpha. And apparently, Generation Alpha would actually be putting together software that would understand what people really mean when they say something. Well, good luck with that one. A ring that you can ask AI questions, such as the answer to 8 times 9, and indeed technology that allows people to read other people's minds. Again, fairly scary. The rise of the kidpreneur is what we're talking about now. We're delighted to welcome to the program so who's very much committed to this, Senior Vice President of Product and Solutions at Visa Europe. Of course, it's Merit Abdieb. How are you, Merit?
I'm great, thank you, Alex. Thank you for having me on your show today.
Well, it's great to connect with yourself. Obviously, neither of us are Generation Alpha. So on that basis, that's a whole new world on that side of things there. But this survey that suggests that over 3/4 of Generation Alpha folk, who are basically people born between 2010 and indeed yet to be born 2025, so the kind of 15-year bracket that we're actually in, have earned money in the last year using technology to help them do so. So is this a case of, you know, when it comes to technology, the Generation Alphans will be well ahead of us?
Well, I mean, Alex, we've got to remember that this is the first generation that's grown up completely surrounded by technology. They're as connected to the online world as they are to the real one, and they're utterly comfortable in navigating it. And you're right, they are earning money using technology. 50% of those that earned money last year used technology to do so. We met a young lady, Sky Ellen, aged 13 years old, who owns her own online business, Sky Sweets and Treats. And she's using ChatGPT to work out how to reach new audiences. So really innovative there.
Yeah, I mean, some of the suggestions that they put forward in terms of how they can develop AI, kind of we already have to. I mean, a phone that does everything you ever need, opening doors, locking doors, turning things on, so you only ever need a phone. I think that's kind of out there, isn't it, really, with certain cars and manufacturers?
That's right. It is out there today. I think what's really interesting is how this generation is thinking about how that can enable a more convenient life for them and letting their imagination run in terms of what that might mean for the future, which is why we're really excited to launch our Junior Inventors Day. We'll be inviting these young people to come in to our headquarters in London Paddington to work with us and explore new ideas with some of the experts behind the scenes here at Visa. We'll be picking the best invention of the day, and through that, we'll be appointing our first junior chief innovation officer. We're really excited about that.
Yeah, the only limits are those of the imagination, and they probably don't exist. Again, other examples that I thought were a little bit ethically questionable, shall we say. I mean, that AI technology that allows somebody to read other people's minds. I mean, I can see lots of issues coming up there with data protection.
Yes, absolutely. So I think one of the things here is that this generation is really thinking about different ways, limitless ways through which technology can be explored. When we bring them behind the scenes here at Visa, we'll be talking about how we can put the right guardrails around some of these ideas that they have. But it's really exciting to see how they're thinking about technology.
Yeah, I mean, certainly a bank card registered to individual fingerprints. I think that's fairly straightforward. Football boots that measure all the statistics of a game and dry themselves. Clearly a sporting silver put that into place. And I suppose way ahead of Douglas Adams and Babelfish, and indeed the Google Translator, translator in your head that translates any language.
Well, I mean, think about that, right, for a moment. An assistant that can help you navigate different languages and communicate with others. I mean, that's something that I can definitely see happening. We, I think, see a world in which the power of technology like Gen AI, virtual reality, smart assistants, and so much more can be used to enable a more convenient life.
And children, of course, more than three times as likely to think about earning money by watching digital content creators rather than traditional sources such as books, which I suppose just adds further evidence to what you've spoken about already, Meref, in terms of how these things are kind of rolling out there. So are you excited by this future? Is it a case of excited but a little bit scared?
Definitely more on the excited front. We have been the pioneers of innovation and payments technology over the last 60 years, you know, from chip and pin to contactless to turning phones into payment devices and even cars. We've been working with members of the car industry to turn cars into payment devices. I think we're very excited about harnessing all of the ideas that come from this new generation to see a world in which we continue to innovate in payments. So definitely very excited.
The Junior Chief Innovation Officer, you've already spoken about it, part of Visa's call for businesses to innovate fast, to get ahead of rising expectations. In terms of people who wish to get involved with this, follow the whole strategy through, where would you point them?
I would point them to www.visa.co.uk/Inventors Day. That's www.visa.co.uk/Inventors Day. They'll be able to find the application to participate in that Inventors Day on that website.
And as Senior Vice President of Product and Solutions, are there any particular inventions that you personally would like to see developed in the near future, which you make use of AI and such like?
Well, I think AI is going to transform the way that we interact with the world in the future. It'll be embedded in many things. In the world of commerce, I can see that making it even more easier for us to find the things that we want to buy and tailoring that to suit our needs. So definitely many applications for Gen AI and many of the other technologies that we discussed.
And again, we just put the caveat out at this particular stage that as far as I'm aware, neither Marif nor myself are actually chatbots as yet. We haven't been replaced by AI at the moment, but you never know. You never know.
Great caveat, Alex.
Yeah, I think it's just important, really. Marif, it's been awesome connecting with your good self. Marif Habdiab, Senior Vice President of Product and Solutions for VC Europe. Huge thanks, and keep on keeping on.
Thank you very much, Alex.
Tech envy, is it something that you've ever felt prey to or suffered from? Apparently 31% of British folk feel jealous when a neighbour purchases something that's better than what they have. 47% actually feel flattered if a neighbour bought something that's exactly the same as them. Sounds like a deep-rooted psychological aspect we need to dig out on from this particular thing. So we've got not one, but two fabulous folk to share their thoughts on this. First of all, consumer psychologist extraordinaire, Dr. Catherine Jansen-Boyd. How are you, Catherine?
I'm very well, thank you. And you?
Excellent. And we also have the legend from The Gadget Show and indeed Shop Smart Save Money, a TV presenter extraordinaire, John Bentley. How are you, John?
Very well, thank you.
Excellent. So, Catherine, if we come to you first, this particular phenomenon, tech envy, is it just a variation on the theme of wanting to keep up with the Joneses?
Yes, absolutely. Unfortunately, consumers have a tendency to compare against others and see what they have. And what's particularly interesting with this is that if we're comparing against people we know quite well or just live in close proximity to us, it will tend to create more of a desire of items that we actually want. So we do want to keep up with the Joneses, as the research actually suggests. This is really important to us because if we don't, we kind of feel slightly inferior by having the wrong kind of gadgets. And there's plenty of research actually in the realm of consumer science that's showing that we are really likely to do what the neighbor's doing. So even things like solar panels, we know that if we look at our neighbors, they have solar panels, we're actually three times more likely to go off and think about whether we need it or not. So this is something that's, you can even walk down the street and basically see symptom or signs of. So it is very interesting, but of course we compare subconsciously, so we're not aware of doing so.
John, presumably you're somebody that people will point to and say, if only I had all the technology that John Bentley has, my life would be much better. I mean, have you ever suffered from tech envy yourself, or is it a case of of course not?
Well, I used to, but only when I was very tiny. I think when I was a very small child. I mean, it's so many decades ago. Your listeners may find this hard to relate to, but I can remember my uncle getting a colour TV when these were brand new in 1968, and I was really envious of that until we got one in 1972. But then I sort of learned to sort of grow out of that in a way, because it was, I mean, this almost ties in with the research from Hisense, in a sense that you need to get over that and try and get things that have all the same features at a lower price, so you can have more of them and sort of or not necessarily more things. You might want to go on holiday or go out for meals more often if you can shop smarter, in a sense. Well, I would say that with our program title, but you can get more for less.
And clearly, with Black Friday literally approaching rapidly across the days and so on, people are going to be, lured, perhaps that's too strong a word, attracted to all the many and varied deals that are actually out there. I mean, this is something that tech companies very much prey on, isn't it? That they actually want the nice, shiny, latest version of that sort of iPhone or that kind of system. Is it a kind of smoke and mirrors thing, John?
No, I think there is a reality to it. Also, a lot of people are quite happy. You can actually genuinely get good bargains, and especially if you time it right. Yes, it is. People tend, on the whole, to be satisfied with their purchases. I know there's always these issues, like actually the problem is some other time of the year when it's been cheaper, or some people might be drawn to buy things that they don't really want and they regret it afterwards. But I think on balance, it's a good thing. It's certainly taken over from those other traditional sale times, you know, the run up to Christmas or just after Christmas, the New Year sales. Those have sort of fallen back, and it's still quite a dominant thing. And I think you, if you plan ahead and you know you want something, you can keep a bit of an eye on the prices and do your research and look back at what the prices have been on those the websites that tell you those things, and you can really get a good bargain.
Catherine, with a cost of living crisis obviously upon us and clearly looking for bargains, as John's been alluding to, is there any advice that you actually give for people who actually feel as though, you know, they genuinely are envious of their neighbours, but they effectively don't quite know where to go about the sort of way to actually match them? Or would you just say, just give up?
Well, I would say probably give up if you really are under the strain of tight finances. Having said that, you can really find bargains with things like Black Friday. The key to this, and this is what John was kind of mentioning as well, is to make sure that you know, to make sure that you're satisfied at the end. You know what the cost was, so you actually are getting a bargain. So you're not just buying something because you think it's a bargain. Make sure you're buying something you want. So do your research. The reality is, the more research you've done about an item, the more your brain automatically puts the brakes on if you think this isn't the right product for you, which means it's easier to take a step back. So having information is a really good tool for people. So you need to be realistic and you need to stay conscious and you need to actually not multitask when you're doing the shopping online, for an example, because it distracts you from focusing and thinking, do I really need this? So just be a smart shopper. Think about what you're buying and take your time. And if in doubt, take a step back, go and have a cup of tea, go and look at another store, do whatever it is. And then after 10, 15 minutes, you might very well have forgotten about this item. However, if the draw is still there and you are going back to it, maybe it is that this is something that is a good bargain and something you really want, in which case I would say maybe snap it up.
So the counsel would be BTIP or BTIP, beware the impulse purchase. Would that be a way you'd say forward?
Absolutely. Really spot on. Nicely put.
Yes. Yes, I really agree with that. Actually, I always find that if I keep searching for something again and again and again, I know, and then I'll probably think, yes, I will buy it. Whereas that avoids that the danger of the impulse buy. Yes, very good.
Yes.
John, what new technology would you advise that could be really impressive if, for instance, you're living in Lincoln or in Teesside or any other part of the world, you say, yeah, that's the one that basically will have the neighbours salivating with envy?
Oh, I think the TV is the starting point, because it's such a common theme and such the basis of so many many household bits of technology. So to get the best one you can, really. Advice there. Yeah,
because it's all flat screen these days. From back in the day, where you used to have all manner of other bits and pieces. But yeah, interesting. The screen is actually there. Catherine, have you ever been tempted into getting some new tech just to actually impress your neighbours?
Not to impress the neighbours, no. There is an element of that the more you work within this kind of area, the more aware you are. And that's how you put the brakes on. You can even stop the envy by being consciously aware of it. So I must admit, no, I don't think I ever have. I'm very good at talking people out of buying things unless they absolutely need to have something. So sorry for that very boring answer.
clearly the world needs a virtual app of Dr. Catherine Jansen-Boyd to actually provide these breaks to actually work on. And I'm just fascinated by the notion that it can be seen as a compliment if you replicate a neighbour's purchase. That seems a little bit bizarre, but is that something which psychological studies have shown?
Yes. Well, this is a two-sided element here. People can get annoyed because they don't want to be copied, because they see it's an infringement, and then all of a sudden you're not superior in the items you have. But equally, if it's someone you really like, i.e. often close proximity means you like people more. So if there's a neighbor you're really friendly with, then you tend to think, oh, actually, they want to be like me. That's really nice. And then you feel flattered. So it depends a little bit on the relationship you have with the person. But absolutely, there can be envy involved.
Well, there you go. John, presumably hisense.co.uk, that's HISENSE, is the place to go to if you're wishing to track down some bargains for Black Friday.
Well, potentially, yes.
Excellent. And can people follow you on the social media, John? I mean, are you, from that point of view, is there a way in which people can keep up to date with your activities and adventures?
Yes, I do bumble around on there. Yes, John Bentley 90, J-O-N, John without an H. And John Bentley 90, I do occasionally spout forth on X and Instagrams and that sort of thing. Yeah,
I suspect you might be the generation who actually remembers Joe 90, of course, Gerry Anderson's classic series, and I'm obviously sort of taken with that in terms of high technology back in the day.
Oh, indeed.
For the moment, though, John Bentley, TV presenter extraordinaire, and Dr. Catherine Jansen Boyd, a consumer psychologist, huge thanks, and have some great Black Friday sales experiences, folks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
From the Department of Interesting Numbers, apparently we breathe in and breathe out approximately 22,000 times a day. Curious, as in 22,000 days, we'll all be about 60 years older. I just thought that was interesting. Anyway, enough of such stuff. Let's talk about the importance of breathing and why actually ensuring we can have that nice inhalation and exhalation is so important, and how to cope when it falls out of kilter with the rest of us. Well, to actually talk about that, we're delighted to welcome Dr. Amika Okorocha. How are you, Dr. Amika?
I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
Good. Okay, let's talk then about this recent research, which basically suggests that 40% of us say that having a blocked nose is one of the biggest distractions when they have a cold. We need to breathe in and out using those nasal capacities, don't we?
Exactly. It's essential for everyday life. And the thing about breathing is it's such a passive process. Like, you wouldn't know you're doing it unless you actually focus on it. And then you really only focus on these things when something goes wrong. So obviously, if you're having symptoms for a cold, for example. So the research that's come in from Stérimar shows that more than 8 in 10 Brits, 83%, said that their concentration was worse when they had a cold. Normally you could, on average, focus for about 46 minutes on a task, but this has reportedly fallen to 26 minutes if you have a cold. Mm-hmm. And some of the biggest distractions, as you know, most of us have had cold and flu, are headaches, tiredness, being bunged up, runny nose and blocked nose. So what Stérimar did was they asked a number of Brits what are some of the best ways to combat, you know, nasal congestion, those types of symptoms. And a lot of people turn to natural remedies, we'll call them natural remedies. So stuff like drinking lemon and honey, taking vitamins, having steamy bath, chicken soup, smelling ginger, et cetera, which can provide some sort of benefit, but they don't have the scientific backing as something such as like a nasal spray, if that makes sense.
So looking for that, I mean, are you suggesting that the good old-fashioned remedy for so many families across the world, chicken soup, is going to be replaced by a nasal spray, or is it a case of we can use both?
Yeah, you could use both. Obviously, the chicken soup seems to help a lot of people, I guess, if they keep doing it. And if it works for you, it works for you. But obviously, with the nasal spray, you know that you're going to have, you know, scientifically backed, proven methods of how to relieves your symptoms. So it's more likely to work for everyone rather than just the chicken soup. But yes, combine the two. Combine the chicken soup, smell the ginger if you like to, do what you need to do. As long as you're not harming anyone or you're not harming yourself and it gets you better, then carry on.
See, this is why I appreciated your advice during the pandemic, Dr. Amika. It's so straightforward and sensible. It works in every sense. Now, in terms of obviously Stérimar itself, I mean, clearly this is something which can actually provide some useful things. But for those people who actually sort of are concerned about, well, it's all very well to talk about pharmaceuticals, maybe it's worthwhile noting that this is free from steroids, drugs and preservatives. So that is something which means you can use nasal spray alongside other medicated products.
Exactly. So when it comes to a number of different nasal sprays, they contain chemicals. They might contain a chemical or a steroid component. This is obviously steroid, drug and preservative free, which means it could be used not only by anyone taking other medicated products, but pregnant and breastfeeding mums and children over the age of 3.
It's also, I see, sourced or made from 100% natural seawater, basically off the coast of Brittany, France. Which again is an interesting line, because is that something else which maybe in the roots of our ancestry we kind of still need to return to the ocean even for our cures?
Yeah, well, I get it makes a lot of sense, because when you look at the Stérimar congestion relief, it's a hypertonic solution. So it means that it has more salt content than the cells in our body. So by osmosis is what's going to use to clean out all the thick mucus and basically all the impurities in the nasal cavities, which is going to allow you to breathe easier. It makes sense.
So allowing for the patient comes and says, right, my dose is blocked up, etc. Sterimar, presumably you get your seal of approval. Is there any particular protocol in terms of how often you should apply it, or is it a case of use it whenever you feel bunged up?
Well, for the Sterimar Breathe Easy Daily, you could use this one every day over the wintertime to kind of flush out your nasal cavities, whether you have symptoms or not. And then with the Sterimar Congestion Relief, there's the hypertonic solution. I would say use up to 2 to 6 times possibly a day and night if you need to. And this is usually going to rapidly help decongest the nose and wash out the nasal cavity and prevent your symptoms.
Have you noticed any increase in terms of people suffering from colds and flu? Or is that just a case of it's every year it happens and every year we still have to sort of deal with people trying to cure the common cold?
Yeah, it's an every year thing. It's a topic that's been coming up since I was in medical school. Every year is a common cold, especially in these winter months when we're spending a lot more time indoors with in close proximity with other people. Obviously, you're more likely to pass something on potentially. So most people can deal with the common cold quite well, but as in by using these methods, it's just going to help ease your symptoms.
Yeah. And in terms of the other well-worn challenge of nasal tracts and so on, hay fever, can Sterimar help there as well?
I'm not sure exactly what benefit it would have for hay fever, because when we talk about hay fever, obviously it's more of the summer months, and we use different medication which can actually combat the mast cells that cause the allergen and the triggers in hay fever. So that was a little bit different. So for hay fever, we focus more on medicated products such as like steroids and antihistamines, which could provide benefit in those nasal drops. But here it's more just flushing out the nasal cavities and clearing the mucus to prevent any kind of ear, nose and throat disorder. So although the symptoms are similar with hay fever and in the common cold, the treatments are different due to the fact that one is being caused by like an allergen, such as in hay fever, and the other one's being caused by a pathogen like a virus, such in the common cold.
Fascinating information. Where would you point people if people want to do a deep dive into the advantages of Sterimar? Is there a website that you'd say, go there?
Yes, sterimarnasal.co.uk has all the information on the different Sterimar products and how they work and about Sterimar and where you can purchase and buy it. So a lot of people can benefit from that.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad you haven't completely dissed the chicken soup or indeed the honey and lemon possible remedies, but clearly this is another weapon in the armory against the winter flu bug, etc. Dr. Emeka Okorocha, a huge thanks, and may your nasal passages remain forever clear.
Cheers. Thank you very much.
Well, there is some good news for motorists. Yes, I know, shocking. Take a moment to actually sit down and relax, because the Department for Transport has confirmed that they will gradually be starting to fill in potholes. They've added £5.5 billion of funding for local roads maintenance between, obviously, 2020 and 2025 that has been announced. And that is good news, but is it? Let's find out a little bit more about the kind of challenges of keeping the nation's potholes in shape, or at least to manageable levels. And to talk about that from JCB, we've got Nihal Dhillon. How are you, Nihal?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. It's great to connect with your good self. Now, is this, as I said, a good news story, or is it a case of it's literally just a drop in the pothole?
Well, as a manufacturer, we think it's fantastic. We really welcome the investment that the government have put forward. And, you know, we're really looking forward as a company to working with local authorities here in the Midlands, in the North. And, you know, as a manufacturer, we're here to help fix Britain's roads. That's what we're committed to. We're a British-owned company making machines in the UK. So we're not only promoting British jobs, but also, you know, we're helping to automate a process and really committing to repairing the pothole problem that plagues this country.
Yeah, I mean, the chairman, of course, JCB, Lord Bamford, described potholes as a scourge and a blight on the nation's road networks. I mean, it is problematic, and those of us who've actually suffered from potholes will acknowledge the challenges within that. Has it just been left to rack and ruin because there has been the kind of sense that, well, motorists can deal with whatever, you know, they don't have to worry about that?
Well, yeah, traditionally, your sort of normal methods to repair a pothole are very throw and go, whereas the solution that we're promoting, which is the Pothole Pro, will allow for a more permanent repair and really make sure that investment is being put to the best usage. You know, motorists will find it extremely frustrating having to drive over the same piece of road that's repaired, you know, every couple of years. Whereas what we're trying to do is make sure that that money's put to repairing something once and doing it properly.
Well, this is, of course, a critical point and the sort of focus of the story now, Hal. This is something that, I mean, you know, JCB might have actually solved this problem, as you say, doing it once and once for all. Are you confident that's going to work from that point of view? Or is it a case of we might be having this discussion in 20 years' time and saying, what about all those potholes that were filled in a few years ago?
As a company, we're confident that it is a more permanent repair. It's you know, from a compared to a traditional method, it's even still compared to a traditional throw and go method, it's a time reduction. It's a quarter of the time. It's half the cost, and it is a more permanent repair. Yeah. We've got machines. These Pothole Pros are working all around the world as well as in the UK. So we have confidence in our product.
And it is, they all are automated, of course, from that point of view. I mean, you're shifting the transition from manual teams to these new automated machines that can actually repair the whole process. Are there still human beings involved with the process? Or is it a bit like automatic drivers? We're just relying on AI to actually look after us.
There are still human beings. So the machine itself has an operator in the cab who doesn't actually have to leave the cab to do the entire preparation of the pothole. So you've got good health and safety improvements, and obviously your reinstatement of the pothole. So once it's prepared, filling it up with tarmac is still going to be done by people. So you're not actually going to be costing, putting anybody out of a job. It's just a more efficient way of actually repairing the potholes.
Excellent. Anything else you'd like to add, Nihal, in terms of this good news story for fixing the nation's pothole problems?
Yeah, well, I think that's it. As we, you know, as like I said, as a company, we really welcome the investment. We're really looking forward to working with all the local councils, halving the cost. You know, Stoke-on-Trent City Council, for example, have said that they've done 7 years worth of pothole repairs in 1 year, which is really the message that we're trying to get to every council. And yeah, you know, we'll be automating and innovating with them over the next few years.
And I love the way you actually refer to Stoke-on-Trent there, because obviously being part of the potteries, it's probably ideally placed for the pothole, but maybe that's another line entirely. Nihal, if people want to actually follow through with JCB, because I know there are lots of folk who actually just love to kind of focus on how the company's developing, etc., is there a website? Where would you point them?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a website, jcb.com, or social media, which is JCB Machines on Instagram, on X, Twitter, Facebook, etc., YouTube channels, all sorts of stuff. And if anyone wants more information specifically on the Pothole Pro, then you can just search JCB Pothole Pro, and there'll be reams and reams of stuff online about that machine.
I've even seen dancing diggers actually at various country shows over the years featuring JCB.
Absolutely.
A whole new world entirely. Nihal Dhillon from JCB, huge thanks, and keep on keeping on.
Thank you very much.
Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, as the old classic line goes. And then again, you can also talk about dust as in the whole notion of dark materials. But apparently, dust is something which is certainly impacting on our health and indeed in our households. And to actually address some of the challenges of a recent study that's been carried out to investigate just how dust is continuing to actually mount up, we're pleased to actually welcome the senior research engineer at Dyson. That's Luke Stidson to join us. How are you, Luke?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Excellent. It does sound as though, Luke, you're kind of in a very dusty bag in the environment, but I'm sure we'll actually manage to work our way through this. Tell us a bit about this particular latest research from Dyson.
Sure. So at Dyson, we've spent over 20 years studying real dust. And myself, an engineer and microbiologists that we have on site, work together to design machines that remove the visible and also non-visible dirt and debris from your home. And so what we've done is survey people, and in the 2023 Global Dust Study, we've seen that there's been a significant reduction in the number of people making a regular cleaning schedule. It's actually dropped by 15% globally. And this is a bit of an issue. So household dust is basically a complex mix of particles. It can include dead skin cells, hair, dust mites, dust mite feces, bacteria, viruses, mold, all sorts of nasty things. So what we want to do is encourage people to clean a little bit more regularly, and pick up those sort of proactive cleaning methods rather than reactive,
to try and improve our general well-being.
Yes, well, certainly, as you said, 60% of people now admitting to only cleaning when they see visible dust. I suppose you can't get the staff these days, but that's another line entirely. Were you shocked by these findings, Luke, that people are getting less inclined to actually do the dusting, do the basic housework?
I guess because we've been studying dust and people's cleaning behaviours for so long, it's not much of a shock. These things kind of come in cycles. I guess what one of the key sort of things that has changed recently is people haven't been spending quite as much time at home as they might have done over the last few years. People are going back into the office to work, so they're not spending so much time in their home, and they don't necessarily have as much time to do the cleaning. So it's not too much of a surprise that there's a drop-off, but what we really want to do is encourage these proactive cleaning practices, because if you can just clean weekly using your vacuum cleaner to basically clean all of your big surfaces like your floors, whether they're hard floors or carpets, and use your vacuum accessories such as your mattress tools, which have nylon bristles that can basically agitate dust and debris off your mattress. If you make sure you clean both sides of your mattress regularly as well, you can kind of help remove some of those nasties that are around your home.
So presumably what, little and often is better than actually none at all, basically?
I guess little and often is good, but what we're saying is it's good to do a thorough clean as well. So dust mites basically thrive in warm, humid conditions. And so you can help this first and foremost by keeping your home cool and well ventilated. Also, what you need to do is make sure you're also vacuuming under those slightly harder to reach areas, like underneath your sofas, underneath your beds. So 50% of Brits don't clean under their beds, and those areas are often very warm. We also spend a lot of time in our bedrooms. So what we want to make sure is people are cleaning those areas to make sure you're picking up all of those nasties.
Indeed, 55%. One who's impacted. Also kind of relates to it as well. Luke, where can people find out more information about Gleeson in particular, and how obviously that can be a useful way of going through some of the things?
So we would encourage listeners or viewers to head to the Dyson newsroom at dyson.co.uk/newsroom, where they can find out more about our recent dust study and other tips and tricks on regular cleaning and how we can improve our well-being by doing so.
Excellent. Well, that's so lovely. When next we speak, we'll have a slightly better connection. But for the moment, Luke Stitson, Senior Research Engineer at Dyson. Many thanks indeed. Keep on cleaning, Luke.
Keep on cleaning. Thank you very much.